Thank you for the invitation, Sebastian. I would like to share with you, present and open up for discussion with you an experiment on the production, circulation, and hopefully utilization of a new kind of particular global environmental image, particularly graphs, representing the international climate negotiation process within the UNFCCC or CCC. As Hélène has said, I'm working at Media Lab with Bruno Latour's team in mapping adaptation debates using digital methods and digital tools to create visualizations and to represent controversies and debates and to make them legible. So today you're gonna see some spaghettis and some spaghettis put along. And what I will try to do is, it's interesting to be an STS scholar and at the same time produce these kinds of images, because we have this such a critical culture about how scientific products are made, that when we start making scientific products, at least visual ones, like not like papers, words, it's different, it's a different thing. But I would like to discuss which is the status of these kinds of new images we're creating, which represent the other side of co-production, which would be the negotiation processes, and not images of the IPCC to talk about the natural world or global system. So this has been carried out in two projects. One, it's EU funded, it's EMAPS, and you have the address if you want to take a look. And this is EMAPS, which is INR funded. Medea, sorry. Thank you, Ian. Two of my colleagues are in the bottom, in the back, and the work I'm presenting today has been, the presentation is based on work done with Tommaso Venturini, Ian Gray, and Cari de Prick, which are based at Media Lab, and we collaborated with IFRIS, Cortex Platform, with Jean-Philippe Conte and Vincent Savan. So, the question I want to raise is how we move from this to an image, to a graph representing interactions that happened over 20 years in the framework of the UNFCCC, the United Nations Convention on Climate Change, which started in 1992. So just to remind, I'm not going to talk a lot about the content of the negotiations, try to use the images to see what they say about them. Just it's important to remind that the main objective of the convention presents a very specific framing of the problem, which we can call the pollutionist approach, and therefore a very particular solution. The aim of the convention is reducing emissions and stabilizing greenhouse gas concentrations, that is the pollutionist approach, in the atmosphere at a level that would prevent dangerous anthropogenic interference with the climate system within a time frame sufficient to allow ecosystems, and this is an important point, to adapt naturally to climate change, to ensure that food production is not threatened, and to enable, another very important point, economic development to proceed in a sustainable manner. So this is the core framing of the convention. And what we're interested in looking in this process is that following this pollutionist approach and the adaptation framed as spontaneous, as a natural response, neither the convention nor the proto-Kyotocol put any emphasis on adaptation as a policy objective. There are many reasons for these, which have been now studied in a few articles. The most known of those is Lisa Schipper's one, and there is another very recent one published in Wired Climate Change, presenting the last evolution of negotiations by Kahn. is his name. Head also presents an evolution of the term of adaptation from other fields to the climate change field. So, however, if adaptation was not a policy objective, that doesn't mean that adaptation was completely as absent. Actually, as Farhana Yamin claims, adaptation has always been there, pushed by developing countries are the most vulnerable countries to be recognized as an agenda item. So there are struggles behind this concept of adaptation, which definition is unclear. So this exclusion produced much political debate. This was the situation until 2001, when things started to change. So what I'm going to present now is visualizations that try to produce a full context to understand this change. So to understand change, we need to create, first of all, a big picture, and then start reducing, zooming, and eliminating certain complexities, as you said, quoting, the quotation was very, very good. So to represent this kind of complex phenomena, we need to strike the right balance between representation of complexity and simplification to ensure readability by different users. Of course, we also have to suppose a user of these images, or who these images are addressed. If whether these images are going to be uptaken and used, it all depends on the strategies of the different actors that will engage on them. Of course, we can disseminate them as our project intends to do, but then it all depends on how each actor is going to take them up and use them to give ground to their claims. So our ultimate objective with this project is to explore these possible uses. And actually, that is going to be a little bit outside of the frame of the project, because the project is going to be over soon, and there will be short time to explore those uses. So I will first describe the methodology, and then I will move on to reviewing the evolution of negotiations through the images we produced. And in the end, I will open up the discussion. So the idea is to move from this to a graph. So for this, it's very useful to use this image contained in the Boavista pedophile by Bruno Latour, which actually represents, with a graph and an image, the simplification of complexity, moving for locality, particularity, materiality, multiplicity, continuity, to comptability, standardization, comparability, standardization, text, calculation, circulation, etc. So we have crossing processes, and the robustness of an image or any scientific product, this is the idea, relies in the process of giving account and the possibility of following the chains of translation from materiality to statements, which are actually represented here. I won't comment the text. It's a classical one, and if you didn't read it, it's a good opportunity to read it. So the challenge is whether to find someone that went to all the COPs and has a panoptic experience of everything that happened, or has written in it through gathering the fieldworks of people, or being there and talking with people. That would be the local classical approach of fieldwork. Another possibility would be to gather documents produced during the whole negotiation process, documents that are made available in the UNFCCC. And other possibilities will look at different documents produced by different actors, like the media, NGOs, political constituencies, researchers, etc. All of these documents are in very different formats, and in order to treat them with digital tools, we need to renounce to certain things, because we need to ensure certain coherence of the corpus. Building a corpus is the first challenge of mapping this kind of social phenomena. So we had to find a solution in order not to try to make a map the size, or a map of China the size of China, which I use this image to say what it feels like working with the original documents that are available in the UNFCCC site. So the solution we found was to use a proxy, which is the reports written by the Earth Negotiations Bulletin, particularly published in volume 12, which is dedicated to the UNFCCC process. The ENB started in 1992, and it's now published by the International Institute for Sustainable Development, which is based in Canada, and it currently provides daily reports on 33 separate UN negotiations on environment and development. The aim of these reports are to serve negotiations and negotiators during the process, to inform them of what is going on a daily basis. So volume two is dedicated to climate change negotiations, and at the moment of our research, the website presented 594 issues, which cover the whole official proceedings, that is the off of the Conference of the Parties, or COPs, are not included. So, but however, the reports contain a section, very small one, called In the Corridors, where some things that are off the process are reported. So this daily report is completed by a synthesis report, which also proposes an analysis. So what we did is to scrub this from the website, eliminate everything what was not a daily report on a COP, meaning the synthesis reports and, for instance, reports on workshops or on meetings of the subsidiary bodies, in order to ensure more coherence and to have a clear representation of what goes on in the COPs. So, so what is interesting about this is that this it's a trustful, a reasonably trustful source, this is an example of the bulletin, and it is good as a proxy because we have the production process of the reports is very well documented and oriented by very strict guidelines. In fact, the reports are written in a collective work of around, I don't remember the exact amount of people working, but people from the domain from 32 countries. The reports are very structured, they are short, they are 1,900 words, more or less, and they have a very clear structure that is readable quickly by the human being, but also by the machines, is easy to extract information. So the problem with that handbook, which is very also structured in style, the handbook avoids the use of adjectives and adverbs, and this definitely makes the writing and reading quite boring, but as the handbook proposes, it removes any overt signs of subjectivity. Well, of course, we know that this is a strategy to try to make it the most independently possible. However, there are, of course, structuring effects that are represented in the maps then. So, also, well, this is the example of the table of contents, and this is a list of recommended verbs to report on the interactions of negotiators. The result is a very structured text. Here you have... Hello. Here you have an example. Qatar, on behalf of the G77 China, noted the impacts of recent climate-related disasters on developing countries and emphasized Annex 1 parties' responsibility for financial resource mobilization for adaptation, stressing the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities. The Netherlands on behalf of Bulgaria, et cetera, et cetera. So it's an interesting structure for being analyzed automatically, because this helps the entity recognition. For instance, recent climate impacts of recent climate-related disasters, and we also have the actors, EU, Bulgaria, Romania, expressed. We also have chains of alliance on behalf of the, et cetera, et cetera. Our current challenge is working on these, on actors and on their alliance. So far, we have worked on issues and content. So this is what we do. We structured the lexical content of the reports. We process them in order to merge plurals and synonyms, etc., etc. We made a selection from the extractions. We obtained out of a list of 1,178 terms, we clean it from many irrelevant terms or terms that do not make sense alone as an entity in terms of negotiation to leave 300 nominal groups. So this cleaning, of course, is based on expert knowledge or knowledge of the scholars working on them, and it's not possible to do it without knowing the issue. You need to know about the negotiations. And in fact, as our own knowledge on the issue progressed, we went back and corrected many things progressively. So the result is that we obtained a network through a clusterization algorithm that allowed to see a count of co-occurrences that gave homogeneity to the terms. So terms that are linked are terms that appear that co-occur in the same paragraphs taken as a unit of analysis with other terms. So through this algorithm, we obtain these representations. Of course, as with any modeling machine, you need to set parameters. The parameters we set is a certain degree of strength of the link. So in order not to have everything connected with everything, we have to find the right threshold of strength of the links to be represented. And also, we decided to have 7 occurrences at least to appear in the graph. So this is the final graph. I don't have images of the first networks we obtained that helped us actually producing the final one. So we worked iteratively going back and forth from the list to the graph, and so on. So in the end, we created themes that were labeled by us. We named these different clusters and attributed a theme that represents the thematic space of the negotiations. So in order to exploit these graphs, we organized what we call data sprints. Data sprints gather programmers, experts in visualization, social scientists, and we invite a series of experts, issue experts, in this case adaptation, and in this case negotiators and people working on different issues of negotiations like loss and damage. We invited Farana Yamin, representative of the Yaosis Alliance. We represented Richard Klein and so on. So these people came and they presented their views on which were the interesting questions to address in terms of mapping debates on adaptation. So we picked up different questions. We subdivided the participants of the sprint in different groups. Around 40 persons participated. We created 5 subgroups. And the group I was in, we worked on mapping the trajectory, the life and death of issues in the negotiation. So we wanted, basically, to move from this synchronic image without time to a diachronic image. So these are the stream, is a stream graph made in combination with different visualization tools. And I'm gonna present here, here you have an address where you can navigate labs, density design, org, et cetera, et cetera. And here you have another old version of this visualization. One of the strategies, of course, to deal with complexity in representation is to make it dynamic and web-based, where you can zoom and move the different layers and to explore it. And actually, this is in development, it's not finished. What we're going to do is to add the availability to click and obtain text that guides you through the navigation of the evolution of the themes. So, as we have seen, how am I doing with timer?
10 minutes.
Perfect. So, here you get a synoptic view, something which, picking up on a concept by a literary analyst that uses digital methods and transforming it a little bit, we can call a distant reading, because we're not having a close microscopic reading on a particular document of the negotiation, but we get an abstraction, an image that represents 20 years of negotiations around 12 issues or 12 thematic tables, which contain many sub-issues. So here you could get, if you can read it, you have here, I will go item by item, but here you have the 12 themes, and you can get a quick vision of first impression, saying, oh, wow, what is this that occupies so much space up there? And what is this? And why this peaks over there? So you start wondering. So the first thing is Salmat saying, is to get surprised, get struck by what you see, and ask yourself some questions. In order to be stroke or strike, you need to know a little bit of the thing. If you're a complete neophyte, it would result a little bit abstract, this. So you need to have an introduction or a guidance. That is what sometimes in tourism, you need a tourist guide, or you need to ask some people from the city to point you where you're standing in the map, or what those buildings around there representing in the map are. So there are no image, but it's hard to have an image that speaks for itself. It's a combination of assemblages that make them speak and say certain things, of course. So let's start moving. What I'm going to do is an iteration between the thematic space representation of the network and the stream graph of the evolution in time, in order to understand both the content and the evolution of the content and what this structuration in space is telling. The first thing that strikes is the distribution of clusters around the graph. What we see, it's very little the point. What we see is that there are clusters surrounding a core area. So, and we have a kind of particular cluster here, which is scattered in three or four subclusters. So this is the first area I'm going to get interested in examining. So basically, as I told you, the objective of the convention is mitigation, stabilizing gas concentrations in the atmosphere. And this is precisely telling about this divide, this constitutional divide of the negotiations. Out of 7, or out of 12 clusters, thematic clusters of thematic issues, your groups, 8 deal with mitigation. I will detail them. 3 deal with adaptation related issues, and 1 with the scientific assessment or the scientific basis, which actually points out to 2 options, mitigation and adaptation options. So what we see here, this is the IPBC or the scientific expertise cluster, as we call it. We see first the core objective of stabilization, and we see the chain of stabilization, greenhouse gas concentrations, particles per million, and political will. It's interesting that political will appears besides 350 particles per million. Then we have the observing systems, ocean and atmosphere, which are key to establish adaptation options and vulnerability and the state of the environment and impacts. And this leads to adaptive capacity. From here, we move to all 3 clusters of adaptation, vulnerability, and funding. If we look to the bottom, stabilization leads to mitigation options, and mitigation options is linked with models, scenarios, sea level rise. We have some particular impacts, social cost, precipitation, sea level rise. And we don't see it here, but this little point here, it's not little actually, it's quite big. This is IPCC, this is assessment report 4, and this is uncertainties, unscientific uncertainties. What does it mean, this position? It means that it's pooled by many other clusters. Clusters on forests and land use management and different strategies to cope with carbon sinks is also drawn by all the other clusters. So this is the evolution in time of the scientific basis in the negotiations as reported by the ENB. What we see is that this is models and IPCC. Its trajectory, what we see, the size of the stream means the amount of paragraphs in which words, terms that compose the cluster appear. So this is the absolute value, and its position in terms of height, it's the relative value in during the COP. So this tells about the position of the item, of the issue in the agenda of each COP from the International Negotiation Committee of the Convention and Berlin COP in 1995 to Warsaw in 2013. So what we see is a certain constance. It's like a trombone or something like that, like always more or less stable. I was trying to look if the dates of publication of the different assessment reports were represented as peaks or as augmentation. But in fact, for instance, here in 2007, for the assessment report, it goes down. So it's, and particularly for the assessment report, is one of the dots, one of the terms in the graph. Also in 2001, so nothing in particular. Even we see that here it reaches the bottom in 2010 in Durban, in Cancun, sorry. So let's move on. So when we look at mitigation options, of course, we have the cluster of gas emissions. I won't enter into the detail of the terms, but we have all the gases and all the strategies to deal with them, of clustering them, of counting them, of measuring them, etc. We have emission reductions and so on, and many other terms. These are closely linked with Kelrose, which are quantified emissions reduction and transforming Kelrose into pledges into reductions. We have also first commitment period, second commitment period, all terms that are linked to the protocol, which is the mechanism for attaining the stabilization of greenhouse gas concentrations. What is interesting, this little term there is historical responsibility. And over there, we also have the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities, all terms that are mobilized around this table of negotiation. So this means the specificity of a certain language. What is interesting is to see that this is compliance and enforcement. It's a very specific language which was used during a very specific period, and it has, and it has no linkages, at least at the threshold we established with the other clusters. So in the, with the algorithm of spatialization we used, if we wouldn't, if we hadn't put it there, this could be like very far away, because there is no link bringing it together. There is no clusterization effect. So this is greenhouse gas emissions. So what we see is this basically discussed previously to Kyoto. This is the moment where it's the highest on the agenda. Then it goes down, particularly at The Hague, which is the big crisis of the negotiations. And then we see during the negotiations that lead to Marrakech and to the Marrakech Accords, which brought solutions to the implementation of different joint implementation mechanisms and the implementation of the protocol, it grew up. So now we also have it quite low. It's always there. The amount of discussion of words is, of course, is going to appear always a lot because we have CO2. So the term CO2 is constantly used. So it's not surprising that the absolute amount of occurrences in paragraphs is very important, which doesn't mean that it's a very controversial issue, except here, where we know that it was a controversial issue. So here we have the Kyoto Protocol and the terms related to the first engagement period and the subsequent second commitment period. We have two big peaks and a long silent part. So let's move on. Here we have a compliance and enforcement, which basically appears only after Kyoto. It peaks, of course, before The Hague, and then it stabilizes and to stay like almost inexistent. So then, second cluster related to mitigation. We have fuels and transport sector, energy and technology transfer, where we have a lot of terms related to economy, private-public partnerships, facilitating knowledge, etc., etc. On the extreme, quite far away, we have the CDM and carbon offsets, the clean development mechanism. But there are certain terms. For instance, nuclear energy is there, which is interesting. So it's kind of a part of energy there. We wonder why, we still do not know. That's a mistake. So here we have the transport sector and fuels, mainly fuels. It stays always as a kind of silent theme, never exploding, never peaking, always slow. Seems kind of some of reluctance about talking about it. This is energy and technology transfer. We see the contrast. So here is the first index. This is the first indicator, or something we learned. Okay, negotiations are about North-South. We know it, but it confirms it. About North-South relationships, about development. Everything is framed in a very Onusian tradition and a structure of relations between states. So we clearly see, the importance of this topic constantly, with specific peaks like the Buenos Aires meeting in 2004. I accelerate to move to the end. Here, what we have is CDM and carbon offsets. Of course, CDM appeared after Kyoto, so we see it peak in Buenos Aires after Kyoto, and a lot of discussion during The Hague, and a certain stabilization. It came back also in Montreal and in Nairobi when many... I will move on in order to accelerate. Here we have carbon sinks, and also since RED was discussed together in Bali, we also have the Bali roadmap towards post-Kyoto. So actually we have two clusters here that we should try to distinguish with a different color and represent them at different tubes. Here, this shows two strategies to cope with carbon sinks, like LULUC rules, land use and land use and forestry, and so on. So I will accelerate. This discussion particularly emerged after Kyoto and emerged as a response to ensure the ratification of Kyoto, particularly in 2001. It was a very hot topic after the United States retreat from ratifying the protocol. Carbon sinks and RED and post-Kyoto, we see, of course, that is the top topic in Copenhagen. And it occupies the agenda of the last years, starting from Buenos Aires, when we started talking about second commitment period. And now we move to the little space, but central, however, that adaptation, vulnerability, and impacts occupy as a policy objective. So here we have the cluster very linked. That means central, because many of the terms are shared by other tables of negotiation, and very interlinked, showing the dependency of the terms. Interesting to see here, we have, for instance, all the language linked to local dimensions, climate justice, is a language introduced by NGOs, particularly over the last years. Here we have a list of different impacts, water resources, ecosystem, food security, agriculture. What struck me, and I found very interesting, is the centrality of poverty and poverty eradication. Up there, we don't see it here, maybe here, we have development, a sustainable development. So, interesting to see the race of impacts. Impacts were never discussed much until New Delhi and Buenos Aires, where they started to be introduced. So here we definitely see the influence of assessment report 3 from the TAR and the rising amount of discussion on impacts. And recently with extreme weather events, we definitely see, and loss and damage discussions, which are included in impacts, we see them there. Vulnerability and adaptation action, that is, as a policy objective, appear structured around the Nairobi Work Program and the Buenos Aires Work Program. Article 9, which is about Article 9 of the protocol, which is about funding adaptation through the CDM mechanism. And we have the vulnerable countries, most vulnerable adaptation technologies, and some other terms. And this is what we wanted to represent, is this turn in adaptation negotiations. This is the, if we have the hockey stick for climate temperature, for global temperature, sorry, here we have a certain plateau of adaptation as a policy objective. So we see how latent it was during the first 10 years of negotiation until Marrakesh Accords were actually, it started being implemented in Milan and it reaches in Buenos Aires, the so-called adaptation COP. So it stays quite high during the negotiation of the Buenos Aires Action Plan, Nairobi, until its enshrinement in the Bali roadmap and the Bali Plan of Action. Today, it seems to disappear. Why? Because of this. The discussions about adaptation move to a phase of implementation of this policy, and the issue now is how to fund adaptation. Discussions about funding adaptation require agreement on the framing of adaptation, whether adaptation must be associated to development, that is, should we include funding for adaptation in existing development mechanisms, or should we privilege the originally privileged approach, which is funding specific adaptation actions to impacts of climate change, not including climate vulnerability. These are the ongoing current discussions. What we see about funding includes funding of technology transfer and other fundings, but it's mainly about adaptation. And with this, I end. We see the predominance of the issue since the very beginning. So AOSIS, yeah, I'm done. So these were early discussions about funding the costs of adaptation or finding adaptation, a phrase that was going to be included, that is included in Article 4 of the Convention, and so on. This is the article where the first results of this were published. It's an article that mixes a general reflection on digital methods with this exercise, so it's not a very successful one, but it's okay. So I invite you to take a look, and forthcoming we will publish a French version, advanced, in Réseau. Thank you very much. I would like just to then open this to discussion about these images and their usefulness.